Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Tarot International. The Tarot trainers are experts in helping you and your business to achieve, lead, and outclass in every situation. Learn more at tero.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business. Grateful that you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. With me is Brandon Pollard. Brandon works with Impact Community Action Partnership. We're going to find out what the heck that is. And for full disclosure, I got to tell you, I knew nothing, zero, zip about this organization until Brandon made a presentation before the Windsor Heights, Iowa City Council, which I happen to sit on. And I was so taken by what their mission is and what they do that I invited Brandon to come on the News Hour to talk about Impact and their business and what they're doing as a nonprofit among people who are in need. Brandon, welcome to the Business News Hour. Did I get any of that wrong?
No, you nailed it.
All right.
That was right on.
All right. So talk to me a little bit about the mission. What is Impact, a community action partnership? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so our mission is reducing the barriers and burdens that families experiencing poverty have by increasing access to essential needs. So we are a community action agency. Community action agencies exist all across the country. We serve 5 central Iowa counties, but there are 16 agencies across the state of Iowa serving all 99 counties, and there's over 1,000 agencies across the country.
And okay, so you're helping folks that are in need. How do you identify individuals who are in need?
Yeah, so our main way of we're identifying folks is around income and around folks identifying that they have
are they self in so they're self-reporting, so to speak?
Yes, so it depends a little bit on the program. Some programs have very strenuous income guidelines, or we need for our energy assistance program, then folks either need to provide pay stubs or the previous year's tax returns, that sort of thing. But some of the programs are much less so. So for our food pantry, if someone comes in and they say they need food, then they're going to get food.
Right.
So it really varies a little bit depending on where the funding for that program comes from, what are the rules attached to it, that sort of thing.
So I'm familiar with the food desert situation that exists throughout Iowa, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Many places in rural Iowa and rural United States rely on a convenience store someplace and where they can get their food. And convenience stores, of course, are convenient, but they're also very expensive.
They sure are.
And so when people come to you for food, and this is replicated all over.
Absolutely.
Where food pantries and food closets are getting inundated by people. What's the economic reality of that? I mean, I do a business news show. I don't do politics, but I look at what's going on in the United States. Inflation is down. Wages are 4.1%, the lowest unemployment we've had since 1960. We've added hundreds of thousands of jobs in the past 3 years. But there's this disconnect out there that poverty continues to be rampant. What's the driver, do you think, of that?
Yeah, so I'd say what we see is that really ultimately poverty is a math problem. It ultimately comes down to if the income you have is less than the cost of your needs, then you're in poverty. And while wages are going up, then which we love to see, especially since the wages are going up more in the lower income jobs, so that's helping folks. But we also seeing that in a number of places, including in Iowa, then there are some changes in policy that make it harder for folks to access some of the help that they need. More than half of the people underneath the 100% of the federal poverty line don't get SNAP benefits.
Right.
So when we think about food stamps there, then the people under 100% of poverty are really struggling. That 200% of the federal poverty line, even up to that level, folks are on a very tight budget. They're either, you know, they might be making all their needs, but if they are, it's cutting it close. And if one thing goes wrong, it can go into turmoil. So
yes.
Folks under 100% of poverty are, generally speaking, really struggling. And for less than half of those people to actually be receiving SNAP tells me that we're having trouble
something's
getting
upside
help
down
to
yeah.
the people that need it.
His name is Brandon Pollard, ladies and gentlemen. He is with IMPACT, a community action partnership. I want to go back on this 100% of poverty. Do you have any idea what that number is?
It varies based off of household size.
Yeah.
So that varies based off of household size. And it's set at the federal level. So it's the same across the whole country, regardless of if you're in New York City or rural Iowa, the federal poverty line is the same. The way it's calculated is a little bit archaic. It was set in the early 1960s with the War on the Poverty programs. Then there was recognized there was a need to determine who was going to be eligible for these programs. So we needed a way to calculate what poverty is. And ultimately, it was determined the simple way to measure it would they would take what does it cost to feed a family, and we'll multiply that cost by 3. And that's where the federal poverty line comes from. And at that time, they were using mostly data from the 1950s, and that
wow.
turned out to be a decent way of measuring poverty at that time. But the big problem is since the 1960s, then the cost of food, while that has gone up, it's gone up more slowly than a lot of other areas. Other areas have seen much higher rates of increase. It would be like healthcare, childcare, housing, all of these costs have gone up way faster than food. So for the federal poverty line is still the cost of poverty, or sorry,
so,
the cost of food times 3, and that gives us the 100% of the federal poverty
line. So a family of 4, whatever your food costs are, we arbitrarily figure that times 3, and that's mm-hmm. the federal poverty line. Wouldn't you think that we'd do a better job at this? I mean,
well, you know. That's what things is that we actually, several of the federal programs, for example, the energy assistance program that I was mentioning before, that is a federally funded program, LIHEAP. And that people are eligible for that all the way up to 200% of the federal poverty
Got
line.
It.
So some programs, eligibility does go above 100% of the federal poverty line, which to me is a recognition that
something's just a little off.
Measurement yeah. isn't quite right. But that's one thing that I think is an important thing for folks to take away is whenever you see anything about like the number of people in poverty or the poverty rate, what that's always talking about is the amount of people below that 100% of the federal poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying how many people aren't making enough to meet their basic needs. It's about that federal poverty line.
I want to talk just a little bit about the impact on families. And the impact on families, from my mind, and I've done this for 15, 16 years, and
mm-hmm.
so this ain't my first rodeo. But if you're making $15, $17 an hour, which in many places is not enough to sustain a family, oftentimes mom and dad have to work 2 jobs. And then what do you do with kids if you got kids?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's got to take, I mean, the family unit is already disturbed because everybody's working in order to pay up to, and I've seen the numbers, 45 to 50% of whatever their housing costs are.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we see in Iowa about 1/3 of households, of renting households, are cost burdened, which meaning that they're spending it over 30% of their income
right.
on housing costs. I think it's around 10% are severely cost burdened, meaning they're spending more than half of their income on
wow.
housing. So, yeah, that's a big
cost. Big deal.
And, well, Matthew Desmond, in his book Evicted, kind of coined the phrase as very common in housing circles now, that the rent eats first. That, you know, when you have your household expenses, the rent eats first, and then you feed everyone else. And if you're fortunate, then you will have food pantries in the area that can help you fill the gap on the food side of things. But
yeah, I think we've kind of set the stage for what's going on and what the economic realities tend to be versus what people make up the economic realities. So talk to me about programs. You get first, let me go back. Funding for IMPACT comes from where?
Yeah, so it comes from a variety of sources. So first, I guess I should say, all community action agencies across the country were a little bit different from other sorts of social service agencies, because we were, our existence is dictated by federal law, from that the War on Poverty, the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 created a number of programs. That's where Head Start comes from. That's where Job Corps comes from. And that's where Community Action comes from. And it used to be that community action agencies got their like operating funds, essentially, straight from the federal government. In 1980, there was a compromise to keep those funds from being cut to change it into a block grant. So now it's the Community Services Block Grant. Goes from the federal government to the states, and the states distribute that to the agencies. They identify the agencies. So community action agencies are, in a lot of cases, nonprofits. In Iowa, all 16 of our community action agencies are nonprofit 501c3s. But there are some places in the country where a community action agency might be a public agency, so affiliated with a city or a county or something. So those funds are kind of unique to community action, and they make us a community action agency. And then a lot of our other funds are programmatic specific. So I mentioned that energy assistance program before, that it's federal funds. So those are federal dollars that fund that program specifically. We have some other programs that are funded through local governments. Some of our housing programs are funded by some of the counties. We also have support from some of the local United Ways on some of those. Our food pantries are primarily funded through private donations, both in-kind and financial. So we have a wide variety of funding sources. Several of the cities that we serve support us as well, support our ongoing work overall. And so we try to really cast a wide net there, just gathering the folks in our community and the organizations in our community that support the work that we do to try and help keep us going.
His name is Brandon Pollard, ladies and gentlemen, with Impact. And the reason he's sitting here across the table from me at my favorite place to do these interviews, at Grounds for Celebration, in the tiny village of Windsor Heights, is because he gave a presentation to the city council there about funding opportunities. So funding comes from federal to state, counties to Impact, cities to Impact, private donations, a whole and some other nonprofits that also help fund you, like United Way. Mm-hmm. When we talk about programs, and you touched on that for just a bit, give us a thumbnail sketch of, so food programs, what else?
Yes. So
rental?
Yeah. So at Impact, our focus is very much on what we call essential needs. So
okay.
We think a lot about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and the idea with Maslow, of course, being that there are certain needs that are lower on the list that are very basic needs that people need to have, and it doesn't mean the needs higher up, like friendship, love, those things. It doesn't mean those needs are not important, but it means you're probably not going to be able to devote very much of your time, your energy, your resources to those needs until you're getting those basic needs,
sure,
of shelter, water, food, from being met. So we really focus in on those very basic needs. So food, housing, utilities. We have the big energy assistance program from the federal government. We have some water assistance. Over the last couple of years with the pandemic, there was a big fund of water assistance from the federal government. That money is basically all gone now, and so we're...
What is water assistance?
For helping with the water utility bills.
Oh, got it.
So we do have some smaller water assistance programs that are funded by specific communities or water utilities to help their residents, but that is, housing and water are probably the two areas that we are seeing in our service area as the two biggest unmet needs. We also do things that are just helping people with emergency needs. So we've helped folks with a car repair or a woman that had broken glasses. So these sorts of things that
so
are
a woman
critical.
Had, come back here just a little bit. So a woman had broken her glasses. And she contacted you, or how did that work?
Yes, she reached out to us, or she either reached out to us directly or was referred to us by another agency. I think she reached out to us directly, but we do get a lot of referrals. And we do, in some of our communities, have this emergency assistance program. And even in the communities we don't, we sometimes may be able to use some of those donations that we get that are not attached to food or energy or things that are just people give to us and they say, you know, I want my money to have the greatest impact possible. Sometimes we're able to use some of those funds to help in those sorts of emergency situations.
Do you keep statistics anywhere along income, racial lines? Where are we at? Where is the biggest impact needed?
Yeah, so we do collect a lot of
demographic data.
Some of that is, well, we would want to collect a lot of that anyway, just so that we could know how we're doing. We compare that a lot to census data to kind of get a sense of how we're doing. Are there certain communities that we could do a better job reaching out to, whether that's geographic or we say, you know what, we're not reaching very many people in this particular town compared to what we know the need is, or we're not reaching as many people that identify as Hispanic as we know there are, or that are veterans as we know there are in our community. So we can use some of that data. But what we are really seeing is this, that the need is why there's every community in our larger community has folks that have needs. Sometimes some folks might have the impression that some of the cities that have a reputation for being more affluent, sometimes you'd be like, oh, well, no one in community X really probably needs help. But I can assure you, there are people in every single community that are needing help.
I know that very well, as a matter of fact, and there are pockets of that in the greater Des Moines metro. As a matter of fact, you can take a stone and throw it north and hit a lot of those places, as well as east. So talk to me a little bit about impact in rural counties. Are we seeing increases in poverty there as well?
So we are seeing the need in all of our communities. It is definitely, it's different in rural and the more urban areas, but the need is, like, the specifics are different, but the overall picture is the same. We have we serve four more rural counties and our one more urban county of Polk County here. And we are seeing the need in all of those counties for sure. And you know, some of those counties don't necessarily have the same level of funding resources. So it's really, there are more people in our more urban counties, so there are more people that have the need. The raw numbers are much higher.
So if you have a county of 5,000 people, still the percentage of people in poverty is perhaps similar. I mean, yes?
Yes, yeah. So it doesn't always break down the way you would think. So we have Jasper County is one of the five counties we serve, and it has the highest rate of poverty of the five counties we serve. But it's one of the more rural counties. But we also have, I believe, Warren County. I could be mistaken, but my recollection is I think Warren County, which is another one of our four rural counties, has the lowest rate of the five counties that we serve. So, you can't always just say, like, oh, well, the rural counties are going to be higher or the rural counties are going to be lower. It varies from county to county.
But there is a corresponding number that floats around.
If it's going up in one county, it's probably going up in all counties. If it's going down in one county, it's probably going down in all of our counties.
Brandon Pollard has been our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Final question for you, Brandon, and I know that what was interesting, you and I had a conversation, an email conversation, I think it was, about what we were going to talk about, and I found this enlightening, and I hope others have as well. What have you learned in your time with Impact? What light bulb, what has come off in you? Because you spent some time in education, you spent some time in other nonprofit working areas. What have you learned through Impact that has made an impact on you?
Yeah, I think one of the things that has really been driven home for me working in community action is the value of having those local solutions to local needs. Like I said, there's community action agencies all across the country, and we serve five counties here in central Iowa. And that's kind of the big idea of community action. It'd be better to have smaller agencies all across the country that could See what are the needs in their community, yeah, and address them. So, you know, like I said, we're focused very much on essential needs. There are several of the community action agencies in Iowa that one of the things that they do in their area is they do Head Start. We don't do Head Start. There are other organizations doing Head Start in our area, and they're doing a great job. And so there's no need for us to do Head Start. They're doing it. They're doing an awesome job. And so each agency can really see what are the needs in my community specifically, and how can we address those. I also really appreciate part of the idea of community action is the importance of the participation of the folks that you serve. And so part of the required by law structure of community action agencies is our boards are at least one third of the people on our board are public officials. At least one third of the folks on our board are people with a low income, so folks that we serve. And then the final third can be other folks in the community.
Huh.
But having folks that we serve on our board as a part of the decision-making process, I think is really important. And it's important that the folks that you serve have a say in what you're doing.
Absolutely. Brandon Pollard, thank you so much for spending so much time with us. I really do appreciate it, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
That, once again, is the voice of Brandon Pollard. He is with IMPACT, Community Action Partnership. There are 16 regions in Iowa, but many, many, many more all across the country. And yes, we will have links to IMPACT up on the radio blog. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us that put this together each and every day, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music that we're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Brandon Pollard, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe. Be well. Be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.